Tuesday. Have a good day. Well, that's good. Thanks for tuning in. Little program out here real quick for you. Brad Friedman, who fills in on this program a lot when I'm not here. He's going to be on TVNewsLies.org radio tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern time. So check it out. Go to TVNewsLies.org. Find their radio show thingy, and that's tomorrow night, Brad Friedman, and we'll be talking with their editor-in-chief, Jesse, about the latest news about Sybil Edmonds and other issues ignored by the corporate media. So tune in. That's tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern time, online, TVNewsLies.org. Not Brad's site, but TVNewsLies.org radio thing that they do. Okay? Okay. We have church. Well, it's not really church. We're going to do some religion here during the first segment because a couple of very interesting religious thingies, Christian thingies, are occurring. And I want to share it with you. First of all, scientists have finally done it. They have reproduced the Shroud of Turin. This is according to the Associated Press. Italian scientists have debunked the Shroud of Turin, Italy, the one that is supposed to contain some sort of a cosmic blast of energy that was the body of Jesus, supposed to be the cloth that covered Jesus in the tomb. And the scientists say the experiment proves that the relic was a fake, man-made, back in the 14th century. The Shroud, if you're not familiar, and I don't know how you couldn't be, bears the figure of a crucified man complete with blood seeping out of nailed hands and feet, and believers say Jesus' image was recorded on the linen fibers at the time of the resurrection. Now, what these scientists did, they reproduced the shroud using materials and methods that were available in the 14th century. This is put together by something called the Italian Committee for Checking Claims on the Paranormal. The group said in a statement, "This is further evidence the shroud is a medieval forgery." In 1988, of course, scientists and radiocarbon used radiocarbon dating to determine it was made in the 13th or 14th century. That should have been enough, but you know how believers are. It's true believers are very difficult, if not impossible, to dissuade that they and their cohorts have been buying into fairy tales for a very, very, very long time. Anyway, the dispute continued even after 1988 because the experts couldn't explain how the faint brown discoloration was produced. Imprinting on the cloth this negative image centuries before the invention of photography. First time I saw it, I was very impressed. I really was like, what in the hell is that? You know, what is that? Anyway, many still believe that the shroud has what the lead scientist said, quote, unexplainable characteristics that cannot be reproduced by human means, end quote. But the scientist, the lead scientist in this said, quote, the result obtained clearly indicates that this could be done with the use of inexpensive materials and a quite simple procedure, end quote. And the research was funded, of course, by an Italian organization of atheists and agnostics. Now, the professor who is the lead investigator here is a professor of chemistry at University of Pavia. He said in an interview with La Repubblica Daily that his team used a linen woven with the same technique as the shroud and artificially aged it by heating it in an oven and washing it with water. The cloth was then placed on a student who wore a mask to reproduce the face. He was rubbed with red ochre, a well-known pigment at the time. The entire process took a week, according to the newspaper. The shroud is first recorded in history around 1360 in the hands of a French knight. Late appearance that is one of the reasons why some scientists are skeptical of its authenticity. Blah, 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 yada, yada, blah, 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 yada, yada. The lead scientist told the Republica that he didn't think his research would convince those who have faith in the shroud's authenticity. He said, quote, they won't give up. Those who believe in it will continue to believe. The Shroud of Turin, right? It was an impressive forgery. I have to say it was, but way back in the late 80s when the carbon dating was used, and carbon dating obviously is a tool of Satan. This is something that Satan has cast upon the shore of the earth to confuse, believers and non-believers alike. So there is no such thing as carbon dating. That's a bunch of hokum. There is no such thing as an atom. There is no such thing as electrons whirling around the nucleus of the atom. That is just superstitious pseudoscience. It's, you know, like science fiction, right? Blah. Now, if that's not interesting enough, a group of conservative Republican Christian crazy people, another group of crazy people, Republican Christians, they've decided that the Bible is too liberal. So they've begun something called the Conservative Bible Project. Now, remember, fundamentalists believe that every word in the Bible, even contradictory words, even the words that are gibberish and murderous and mayhem, are inerrant. The real fundamentalists believe in the inerrancy of the Bible, that it was, if not written by the flying finger of God, it was inspired by the flying finger of God, and anyone who adds to or detracts from the Holy Writ has got a date with scorpion spiders and monsters who are going to tear their flesh for all eternity. But not these people, not these Republican Christians who have put together the Conservative Bible Project. They're cutting out the liberal stuff, and they're using very simplistic criteria to do it. According to Carol, who wrote this to me, they cite it as too progressive because there's a lack of precision in modern language and translation. This is a bias in converting original language to modern language. As if modern scholars can't translate Aramaic or Latin or Greek. Oh, yeah, that's real difficult. Anyway, a conservative columnist from somewhere, I have no idea, said... it's crazy, like what you'd get if you crossed a Jesus seminar with a college Republican chapter at a rural institution of Bible learning. So some conservatives are saying, come on, this is crazy. But what they're doing it's astonishing. It's just astonishing. Of all the myriad Christianites that were floating around at the time of that some of the stuff was written, which was around. Well, let me back up. The present day hypocrites, according to Al Babe, want all that liberal bias out of Jesus's good words. This isn't really new. All this happened in 325 A.D. at the First Council of Nicaea. You see, at this time there were many factions back then of Christianity, and some really sharp proto-Reagan free market profiteer decided that it would be much better for the church in general, and certainly better for proselytizing and indoctrination, to have a simple statement of values and ideas rather than the subtle and complicated ideas of real morality. Of all the myriad Christian entities that were floating around at the time, there were two larger ones, the Gnostic Christians and the Christians who eventually became the Catholic Church. The Gnostics basically believed that Jesus was a man who had achieved the Buddhist idea of God mind. Their idea of Jesus was that he was a philosopher who touted a way of being that was peaceful and selfless. They thought Jesus was a person to learn from and be like. The other side believed that to be popular, they would need to tout something different than just philosophy. They decided that Jesus was the only begotten Son of God, and that he was basically the conduit by which to contact God. So these Christians decided Jesus was the liaison between humans and the true Almighty. These were the proto-Catholics who went about trying to incorporate all the silly projections and prophecies from the time of the Old Testament, and also to kind of pander to the existing pagan religions of that time, adopting many of their ideas and holidays. For instance, it was never considered that Jesus was born on the winter solstice. But there was that was a good place to put his birthday, since the vast majority of people celebrated the winter solstice. More of this when we come back. You're going to find this interesting. Stay with me. Of the Mike Malloy program is brought to you by It's Up to Us Alone, featuring Ed Asner. Go to usalone.com for information on where to hear the debut of this dramatic new radio play in your area. Like a brush from my past, the pain of the evening sky. 22 past the hour. Okay, so these crazy Republicans are going to rewrite the Bible and get rid of all the liberal stuff. As Al Bay points out, and I'm sure you know this, there were two primary groups of Christians, the proto-Catholics, you know, back in the day, and the Gnostics. The Gnostic Christians saw Jesus as somebody who had really gotten to the point in Buddhist philosophy, you know, the Godhead consciousness or God mind, and he was like a philosopher who touted a way of being that was peaceful and selfless and might be a good way to live. And the Gnostics thought that Jesus was a person to learn from and be like. And then the other side were the ones who decided to start the mythology. So they stole everything, get their damn hands on. The winter solstice, Easter was another interesting situation, since that day's worshippers celebrated the spring equinox. And what better metaphor to be analogous to the whole rising from the dead thing as a symbol of spring, with the land becoming fertile and alive after a long sleep, yada, yada, yada. You know this. Most people know this. And then there was Paul, who changed his name from Saul. He came along. He never met Jesus, but he had one of those dreams. You know the type, a bit like hearing your dog tell you to do things, one of those. And because Paul Saul was a really scrambled individual with a boatload of personality flaws, he rewrote Jesus' work into the whole sort of peace BS. And the point, if you're a Christian of any sort, your faith was corrupted 1,700 years ago by politics. Now, there's a good website you might want to check out, JesusIsALiberal.org. And what's interesting about the website is the hate mail that they get with bad words. They have a section of the site that is full of hate mail from real Christians who call them effed up and they're, you know, you got to read it. Anyway, go to the website. Jesus is a liberal. JesusIsALiberal.org. So anyway, back to what these crazy right-wingers are going to do. Conservatives, a bunch of conservative Christian Republicans decided they're going to redo the Bible. They're going to redo it the way Wikipedia website is done, have people contribute and source their contributions and so on and so forth. Where did this come from? Nicole Bell wrote this. Where's Nicole from? Where's this from? Oh, hell's bells. Anyway, she writes, apparently not happy with just creating their own facts. The brain trust that brought us Conservapedia is now launching a new project, rewriting the Bible without that annoying liberal bias. See, they're pissed off that the Bible is seen as too liberal, so they come up with a Wikipedia-style conservative Bible project to make sure the Lord doesn't go all wobbly on us. Here's an excerpt. As of 2009, there is no fully conservative translation of the Bible which satisfies the following 10 guidelines. Framework against liberal bias. providing a strong framework that enables a thought-for-thought translation without corruption by liberal bias. A Bible that's not emasculated, you know, avoiding unisex, a gender-inclusive language, and other modern emasculations of Christianity. No. Not dumbed down, not dumbing down the reading level or diluting the intellectual force and logic of Christianity. The standard Bible is written only at the seventh grade level. Really? Oh, my God. I'm fairly well-educated, and I have a hell of a time reading the King James Version. Oh, well. Utilize powerful conservative terms as they develop. Like, you know, the defective translations use the word comrade three times as often as volunteer. Similar updating words which have a change in meaning, such as word, peace, and miracle. We must combat harmful addiction by using modern terms for it, such as gamble rather than cast lots. Use modern political terms, such as register rather than enroll for the census. Accept the logic of hell. Apply logic with its full force and effect, as in not denying or downplaying the very real existence of hell or the devil. Express free market parables. The Bible is full of free market parables, numerous economic parables with their full free market meaning. Exclude later inserted liberal passages that are not authentic, such as the adulteress story. You know, let he who is without sin cast the first stone. Jesus never said that. Jesus would smash an adulteress, just stomp on her face, right? An adulterer. You know, the guy, pat him on the ass, go and sin no more, my son. Credit open-mindedness of the disciples. Open-mindedness often found in youngsters, like the eyewitnesses Mark and John, the authors of two of the Gospels. Yada, 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 yada. The Bible without all the liberal bias. And here we've been told that the Bible is the inviolate Word of God, right? Wouldn't taking out any liberal teachings violate the inviolate? And how many of Jesus' teachings will actually make it into the book? You know, I mean, the stuff is really recorded. I got some for you, and I bet you they're not going to make it in. Some liberal stuff, when we come back, I'm going to share it with you. And then we're going to move on. Don't send me emails and tell me, come on, Malloy, talk about something important. This is important. Before the hour. So this collection of, I don't know, maggots, whatever they are, it's just insane to me, called the Conservative Bible Project. They're going to alter the Word of God in order to get rid of the liberal bias. That's what we're talking about here for a few more minutes. So you got to wonder, how are these halfwits going to rewrite the following statements? These come from JesusIsALiberal.org. For example, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. How, that's in Matthew. How are they going to rewrite that? Also in Matthew, resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. How are they going to rewrite that? If, therefore, verily, someone smites thee on the right cheek, blow his goddamn head off with an Uzi. Are they going to do that? This is from Matthew also. I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. Can you hear a Republican? How about a John Boehner? Can you hear him saying that, right? From John, speaking of John, if any one of you is without sin, let him be the first to cast a stone at her. That's the story of the prostitute that they want to get rid of. Do not judge, lest you too be judged, for in the same way you judge others, you will be judged, and with the measures you use, it will be measured to you. Also from Matthew. Matthew was full of this stuff, wasn't he? Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. The next one, but if ye forgive not men their trespasses, neither will your Father forgive your trespasses. What? Hell no! Give me the goddamn Uzi! This is from Luke. Watch out! Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. What? You mean my 40-room, 30,000-square-foot house? Oh, my goodness. From Matthew, truly I say to you, it will be hard for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. Also, Matthew, you cannot serve both God and money. Also from Matthew, render therefore unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's. Well, that would be like taxes, right? Love your neighbor as yourself. That'll never make the cut. So in everything, do to others as you would have them do to you. Oh, my God. If you would be perfect, go, sell what you possess, give it all to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Oh, my God. Here's another one. But when you give a feast, invite the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed because they cannot repay you. You will be repaid at the resurrection of the just. Yeah, this is going to be a huge success, isn't it? Huh? They're going to rewrite all this stuff and get rid of it. Now, from JesusIsALiberal.org, they have a whole bunch of stuff there. It's a pretty cool website. They say, for 20 years, we've seen the growing domination of the radical right-wing evangelicals on television, on the radio, and in the newspapers and magazines of politics, claiming to own a virtual monopoly on Jesus. They have redefined what he meant and used his name to advance their radical right-wing social, business, governmental, political, and military agenda, or as President Bush calls it, their just and righteous crusade. We strongly object and disagree. We reflect the views of over 150 million liberal, progressive, tolerant, and independent-thinking Christians, Catholics, and others of all spiritual paths, religions, and traditions in the USA and Canada. Together, we reject the radical right-wing Republican evangelicals' claims that they alone represent the will, expression, and blessing of Jesus Christ. Our mission is to promote the integral cone, holistic meme, and the original belief and understanding that Jesus is a liberal. And to their very core, his teachings outline a liberal, progressive, tolerant, loving, open-minded, holistic, and sustainable vision for our world, rather than a scorched earth Armageddon is at hand version of it. We invite you to explore our website, email us, yada yada. We also invite you to share our website with your friends and family. All right, so that's what I'm doing. JesusIsALiberal.org. Check it out. It is it's very interesting. If I were to follow the teachings, I've said before, if I were going to be religious, I'd be a Wiccan. But if I were going to follow the teachings of a philosopher man, it would be probably what is found at Jesus is a Liberal. You know, it's good stuff. I make a big deal about being an atheist and all this other stuff, but that doesn't mean, and I've said this before, I don't have respect for true belief systems that are generous, loving, kind, peaceful, in balance, not filled with this Christian or Muslim or Jewish rhetoric of just pure violence. I'm sorry, I just don't, and a Hindu, yeah, don't forget the Hindus, they'll cut your goddamn throat quicker than you can say Bhaktavi, just as quickly as somebody else. Hugh at the humanthoughts.org writes, Mike, don't forget to mention that the project that I'm talking about here on Conservapedia was initiated by the founder, none other than Andrew Schlafly, the son of Phyllis Schlafly, the co-editor. Andrew is the co-editor, or was the co-editor of the Harvard Law Review with Barack Obama. Check their article on Barack Obama for a laugh or three. That means go to the Conservative Bible Project website. Of course, Barack was elected president of the Harvard Law Review and a few more things later in life. Andrew Schlafly, however, is now censoring the Bible with a handful of homeschoolers and wingnuts. We watch and track many of the goings-on at Conservapedia. At rationalwiki.org. There's another website for you, JesusIsALiberal.org, and this one, rationalwiki, W-I-K-I.org. Rationalwiki.org. All kinds of fun things to do on rainy fall evenings on the internet, huh? Anyway, thanks to Carol and several people who sent all the information in to me. I find it incredibly entertaining. The Shroud of Turin story and all of that stuff. I just find it fascinating, absolutely fascinating, in the same way that I found the belief systems of the Egyptians and the Greeks and the Romans and the Assyrians and you know, pick one, the Norse, all of that. I find it all just fascinating as hell. Any of those aspects of, what would you call that, Kathy? Not paleo-ethnicity, but what would you call that? The study of ancient religions and ancient peoples and cultures. I don't know what you call it. I'm sure there's a term for it. But, I find it all fascinating. Cultural anthropology, I guess that would be close. One of the more interesting stories that I've heard about the King James Version of the Bible. The King James I commissioned several people to do a translation from the original Greek and Hebrew and Latin and Aramaic or whatever. Into English, Elizabethan English, English of the times. And two of the people commissioned, legend has it, were Christopher Marlowe and Willie the Shake, William Shakespeare. And I used to have a little booklet that had all these little weird Shakespeare insertions into the Bible. For example, at the time he was commissioned by King James to... I've never checked any of this out, except what I'm going to tell you. This I have checked out. At the time of his commission to do this, William Shakespeare was 42 years old. And being the great comedic writer that he was, he took the 42nd Psalm. 42 years old, 42nd Psalm. I found it interesting because 42 was the of my football jersey number. I played fullback and I was number 42. And also, the guy that wrote, what was it, Kathy? The restaurant at the end of the world? No, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. In the final book, he said the answer to everything is the number 42. Anyway, I digress. Shakespeare was 42 when he began his project with other writers. If you go to the 42nd Psalm, count in 42 words. You will find the word shake. Go to the end of the 42nd Psalm and count backwards through the Psalm, 42 words, and you find the word spear. Coincidence? Funny stuff? Kind of like Midsummer Night's Dream? Something that Puck might have done. I always found that, and there was a bunch of those, and I've lost. That was the only one that stuck with me, because the number 42. My cosmic connection to the number 42. Okay, can we start the program now? I'm sure Kathy would like me to get down to business. If you have a King James Version, do it. Go to the Psalms, go to the 42nd Psalm, count in 42 words. Lo and behold, so to speak, shake. Go to the end of the 42nd Psalm, count backwards 42 words, and saints preserve us, the word spear. Does that mean anything? Probably not a thing. Only the importance to which you assign it, right? And apparently I assigned an awful lot of importance, and I found it very, very amusing. All right, we got a break here? Okay, let's do a break. We'll come back and, we'll talk about H1N1 vaccine that's out. Now, what else we got tonight? Oh, yeah, the demise of the dollar. We're very close. Very close to the end of the dollar. All kinds of reports. And I've got the Prairie 2 missive. Canada has the fourth best quality of life in the world behind Norway, Australia, and Iceland. The U.S. has slipped from 12th to 13th place. We'll talk about that. Oh, Canada. And some other stuff. A fun night planned for all. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Better stand back. Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
I had to try to do things that the dad should do since you've been gone. Well, you really.
Oh, that's so sweet. 10 before the hour. And you know, this past Sunday, here in Atlanta, there is a famous cemetery. It is Oakland Cemetery. It was opened in 1850, if that's the proper word to use for a cemetery. First consecrated, people first buried in 1850. A lot of Civil War dead. There is an African-American section, two Jewish sections, and mostly white Protestant Christians are buried there. It's a huge place. The statuary is incredible. I guess you can go to their website, oaklandcemetery.com, I would imagine, and see what I'm talking about. But they had an event there, all kinds of booths and entertainers and music and so on and so forth in the cemetery. It was great fun. Molly and Kathy and I went, and you walk among the gravestones and the mausoleums, and some of the doors were open, the mausoleum, so you could go in and see these burial chambers, people buried in the 1870s, 1880s. The Civil War section goes on and on and on, mostly Confederate soldiers were buried there. It's quite an impressive place. They are fundraising and have been for a while because the last time a tornado went through Atlanta, it struck that cemetery and about 80 oak trees and pine trees were destroyed and some of the monuments were overturned. While we were there, one of the groups performing was an African-American choral group. Probably, what, Kathy, 20 people, men and women, who perform at various churches throughout the Atlanta metro area. And I guess sometimes they travel outside Atlanta. But just incredible a cappella singing, most of which the old Negro spirituals, but done in a kind of a modern way. I guess that's the right way to put it. But the kind of music, when you listen to it, I don't know about you folks, but I used to spend a lot of time specifically going to African-American churches on Sunday morning to listen to the choirs. The music was just phenomenal. I and, you know, some of my friends. And one of the places we went here in Atlanta was the old Wheat Street Baptist Church. Well, I shouldn't say old. Well, it's been around for a long time, but it's still, you know, they still preach on Sundays, and they still have the women's choir and the big choir and the children's choir and the men's choir. And if you've never attended a church in a black church, African-American church, it's a real marathon session. You know, it'll start at 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning and go to 1:30 in the afternoon. And brother, when you come out of there, hallelujah, you're singing the praise of the Lord. I don't care what you are. You can be an atheist, a Jew, a Muslim, someone who talks to chairs and sees elves and fairies. It doesn't make any difference. When you come out of one of those church services, those Protestant church services, you are talking the talk and walking the walk. And even us atheists would enjoy that. So in the cemetery on Sunday, it was a very cloudy, overcast day this past Sunday. We rode in a carriage. It was $10 a person. Molly rode for $5. And you get in this carriage, one horse open carriage, and they ride you around for about 20 minutes around the cemetery, point out Margaret Mitchell's gravesite and other people, and the mausoleums, the old Victorian mausoleums that were built, astonishing stuff. But it was kind of a gray, cloudy day, and there were some, there was bluegrass music and some jazz music, but this African-American choral group, holy cow, they were so good. And they had what they call a libation ceremony. Y'all familiar with that? I've never heard of it. It's an old African ceremony. There were two grave sites that the choir, the choral group, walked to from where they were singing. Maybe 300-400 yards, and walked into the old Negro cemetery. And there were two preachers that are buried there. One of the first preachers of a church, African-American church here in Atlanta, and then one not so, you know, one from the turn of the century. And the libation ceremony is where you pour liquid, in this case it was water, onto the ground. There are certain prayers that you say and certain invocations and that are spoken, honoring the person who has been buried. I'd never heard of a libations ceremony, but it was very interesting. Why am I telling you all this? I have no idea. I know that my audience of 37 has probably been reduced to 6 now. Maybe you'll come back after the break at the top of the hour. I just felt like talking about it. I guess that's all. The singing, that was the thing. And these are, you know, middle-aged folks, the singers. And it was just the kind of music you could sit and listen to all day.
Yeah, the gospel music was amazing, but to me, I had no idea there was such a culture of people who dressed up in Victorian outfits.
Everybody dressed up in Victorian outfits.
It was a Victorian
whites and blacks
festival
were,
as well, and some of these things were elaborate, and they were plays on sort of like the technology of the time with these huge spy glasses on their hats and springs and gears on their belts, and like they were all, you know, turn of the century and inventors, or it was just incredible. And this apparently this festival has been going on for 30 years, and it's the first I've heard of it.
It's the first, first I've heard of it too. So if you're ever in Atlanta, check out Oakland Cemetery, and if you don't come here, just go to the website. Some interesting stuff. All right, I promise when we come back, we will get serious and do really hardcore, tough-ass talk radio from a liberal perspective, okay? You stick around. I'll show you a thing or two. I'm Mike Malloy. Channel 7 website in Denver talking about the H1N1 vaccine. It's not going to make it to Colorado until Thursday, and then it's going to be doled out to county health departments. This is true all over the country now. Several metro area hospitals said they won't be taking the flu mist. That's the nasal injection, so to speak, because they don't want to endanger patients. Now, the flu mist, of course, contains a live virus that I believe has been disabled, but it's still live virus. And a infection prevention specialist at one of the hospitals in outside Denver said, when asked if that meant that the flu mist was dangerous, said, no, it's a very safe vaccine in healthy people. Well, if it goes to a hospital, though, I mean, a lot of people in a hospital aren't healthier. They wouldn't be there, right? It's made with the live virus, and the doctors and nurses who inhale the live virus could shed some of it on patients whose immune systems are compromised, obviously. Now, the injected vaccine is made with is not made with live virus. It's made with antibodies that your immune system is then supposed to identify. You know how all this works. A spokesman for the National Jewish Medical Center said flu mist is not to be used on immunosuppressed patients. And a good number of theirs are, according to a spokesman. Flu mist is not recommended for pregnant women, and expectant mothers are in the high-risk group, so they'll have to wait for the injected vaccine. But I'm just curious what you all are going to do. You don't have to call in with this. I hate doing talk radio like that, you know. Flu vaccine, yes or no? But we're having that discussion, Kathy and I, regarding Molly. And while we've all gotten our seasonal flu vaccine, we've gotten our shots. We got them a few weeks ago. I think the only one who's in a high-risk group is Kathy, because she's a female. Well, because she's in a certain age group. Molly is still under the so-called cutoff age group, and I'm over it. So, which really doesn't mean anything. I mean, those are just arbitrary standards, but cutoff points. Molly's an extraordinarily healthy kid, and we have been dosing her with Sambuca elderberry extract. I got a cold about a week before I went to San Francisco. And if you're a regular listener, you know that when I get those damn things, they usually hold on for 2 or 3 weeks. The last time I really got sick, a bunch of people emailed me and said, there's some things you ought to be taking. Epicor, Sambuca. What was the other thing? Oregano capsules, you know. Those are treatments, whereas Sambuca, or the elderberry extract, is a preventive. And I think Epicor is a preventive, too. So, you know, I read the emails and did some research and thought, you know, this is real. This is for real. I really appreciate the people who wrote to me about this stuff. I started taking elderberry extract, 2 teaspoons, a little bit of water, 2 teaspoons full. You do it 3-4 times a day when you get the first symptoms. And it's amazing. You know, for the first time, and I get some ass-kicking viruses because I've got this kid at home here. Molly seems to fight them off. But she brings them home to me. So I was sick for about 5 days, not 3 weeks. And it was mild. I didn't miss any work. I don't know what it was. I guess it was just some kind of an attack, some viral attack. And the Epicor, which builds the, what is it, the T1 cells in your system, the real hungry white.
The killer cells.
Killer T cells. And I've been taking that, and it seems to be just, you know, like, well, of course, Mike, you know, I can hear a lot of you out there who believe in, natural treatments and not supporting the pharmaceutical, industrial complex with all this garbage, this filth that they put out on the market. It really is bad. And I've always felt that. I tend to stay away from medicine. I am not against vaccines. I'm sorry, folks. I know a lot of people look at vaccines as, you know, just short of urinating on the cross. But I don't have a problem with vaccines. I never have had. I've had vaccines all of my life, you know, shots myself. Never had anything even remotely resembling a bad reaction. Ditto, all of my children. And I'm a strong advocate of vaccines. I know a lot of people are not, and that's okay. And you know, that's what makes for interesting dinner conversation. But when it comes to the H1N1 vaccine, I think we're gonna pause and just wait. I don't know what we're waiting for. We're not waiting to see if millions of people die from this. It's just that when Molly got her flu mist, her seasonal flu, it was live virus and didn't bother a bit. You know, she's Molly just kicks ass all the time anyway. Kathy and I are too old for it. So we just got the regular shots. And but here in the Metro Atlanta area, there is just this, you can almost, it's almost like cattle hooves pounding through the prairie trying to get to the slaughterhouse. People demanding the H1N1 virus, vaccine. And that's okay. Again, I'm a great believer in vaccines, but, and this one has been developed by companies that developed the standard seasonal flu virus. I think this year it is type A and type B that's in the standard virus, H1N1 in the so-called swine flu virus, which has nothing to do with swine flu or swine flu. Blah, blah, blah. So I don't know. I think we are going to wait and, kind of, well, I don't want to say roll the dice, take our chances, but using some of these natural herbal supplements or immune boosters or whatever you want to call them, homeopathic medicines as opposed to allopathic, we are becoming believers in this stuff, not to eliminate so-called allopathic medicine. I still believe if you have a disease that's trying to kill you, like pneumonia, Jesus, get treated. You know, if that means massive doses of antibiotic, okay. I don't have a problem with that. But the idea of getting into the preventive mode, you know what I'm saying? If there are substances that build your immune system, why not use them? Now, I'm not coming to this, this church service this late. I mean, of course, I've known for 30 years about natural substances, herbs and roots and barks and berries and so on and so forth. Back in the day, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, when Kathy and I were desperately trying to get pregnant and couldn't, we went to an acupuncturist and he gave her one treatment. 7 days later, she got pregnant. Also, to boost her system, we've gone to Chinese doctors before, and you get that bag of roots and herbs, and take them home. You make a tea, and it's vile stuff, but man, oh man, oh man, it really, really works.
Is this part of the hard-hitting liberal commentary?
That's right. I forgot.
It's coming your way like a freight train. I know, progressive truthism.
Well, I started, to get all funky and talk radio-y, and then the story of what's going on in Denver. What, another break? Oh God. Okay. I promise when we come back. Enough of the nonsense. I'm curious if people are going to get these flu shots. You know, H1N1. You don't have to call in and tell me. It's just a secret between you and your syringe. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Stand back. Eek! It's not chapter 42. It's chapter 46. Ah! It's the 46th psalm. Okay? And thanks to Darren who wrote in. He writes, Mike, very interesting religious stories tonight. I looked around for the Shakespeare thing, and it's Psalm 46. 46 words in, you see shake, and 46 words backward from the end, you see spear. The site said that William Shakespeare wrote this in his 46th year. Just thought I'd pass it on, not to be a hard ass or anything. No, I figured I'd get it wrong. I'm not going to change the number on my jersey, though. That remains 42. But, yeah, it's the 46th psalm. Thanks, Darren. I appreciate it. I really do. Because somebody else wrote in and said, hey, wait a minute, I tried it. Didn't work. Okay, go to Psalm 46. Thank you very much. According to Robert Fisk and some other people, what he describes as a graphic illustration of the New World Order, several Arab states have launched secret moves with China, Russia, and France. France? To stop using the American dollar for oil trading. I'm sure most of you heard about this. A couple of people mentioned on the program the other night. Fisk calls it the most profound financial change in recent Middle East history. Gulf Arabs are planning, along with China, Russia, Japan, and France, to end dollar dealings for oil, moving instead to a basket of currencies, including the Japanese yen, the Chinese yuan, the euro, gold, and a new unified currency planned for nations in the Gulf Cooperation Council, which includes Saudi Arabia, Abu Dhabi, and Kuwait, and Qatar. According to Fisk, secret meetings have already been held by finance ministers and central bank governors in Russia, China, Japan, and Brazil to work on the scheme, which will mean that oil will no longer be priced in dollars. The plans, which have been confirmed by the Independent of the UK, the newspaper, by both Gulf Arab and Chinese banking sources in Hong Kong, may help to explain the sudden rise in gold prices. But it also means an extraordinary transition from dollar markets. The Americans, Fisk writes, who are aware the meetings have taken place, although they have not discovered the details, are sure to fight this international cabal, which will include hitherto loyal allies, Japan and the Gulf Arabs. Against the background to these currency meetings, China's former special envoy to the Middle East has warned there is a risk of deepening divisions between China and the U.S. over influence in oil in the Middle East. Yada, 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 yada. It goes on and on. Now, keep in mind that Iran announced late last month that its foreign currency reserves would henceforth be held in euros rather than dollars. And bankers remember, of course, you and I don't, because we're Americans, we're not very bright, but bankers remember what happened to the last Middle East oil producer to sell its oil in euros rather than dollars. That was Saddam Hussein. And a few months after he made his decision, the U.S. and the British invaded. So this is Prairie 2 has been talking about this in his missives to this program. And I know a lot of people are well aware that this was underway or it was planned. However, even though all these reports are circulating around the globe, Saudi Arabia, Abu Dhabi, Kuwait, and Qatar have been holding, you know, the secret meetings, yada, 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 yada. It's all being denied by the Saudis. I wonder why. That country's central bank governor, one Mohammed Al-Jasser in Istanbul for International Monetary Fund meetings, told reporters there has been absolutely nothing of that nature discussed between Saudi Arabia, the world's biggest oil exporter, and other countries. No truth. And according to what I have here, in order to protect the dollar's status as an international yardstick, Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner told reporters the United States will, quote, do everything necessary, end quote, to maintain confidence in its currency. Uh-oh. He was in Istanbul for this IMF session, too. Geithner said, quote, we recognize that the dollar's important role in the system conveys special burdens and responsibilities on us, and we are going to do everything necessary to make sure we sustain confidence, end quote. Secretary Geithner, I think that time is long past to maintain confidence in the U.S. dollar. And this is a part that, you know, Prairie 2's been writing about this. Krugman's been writing about this. We are looking at some very serious problems, Truth Seeker. I mean, it's one thing for Iraq to say we're going to trade in euros now where it concerns oil. It's something else again when you have China, Russia, Japan, Brazil, Saudi Arabia, Abu Dhabi, Kuwait, Qatar, France. When they, what are you going to do, invade all of them? I know, let's Stanley McChrystal just invade them all. Kill them all. Let God sort them out, right? General Stanley? Huh? Huh? As reported, ever since the global financial crisis last fall, the dollar's role of the world's main reserve currency has been in peril. So, I don't know what all this means. I just means that, you know, I hope it means when I go to the grocery store to buy more canned goods, I can still use dollars and I don't have to switch to yen. This portion of the Mike Beloy program is brought to you by It's Up to Us Alone, featuring Ed Asner. Go to usalone.com for information on where to hear the debut of this dramatic new radio play in your area. Looks like we're in for nasty weather. 25 before the hour, it is time for Prairie 2's contribution to the program tonight, since we're talking about the end of the dollar as an international monetary standard. Prairie 2 writes, gold jumped sharply in the price today after an article in the British newspaper, The Independent. They cited multiple sources in the Middle East and Asia that are saying the Arab oil states have been holding secret talks with China, Russia, Japan, and France about ending the dollar as a currency for trading oil. This would, of course, make the dollar worthless, since the trillions of dollars held as reserves around the world would have nowhere to go. The holders of dollars could not begin to spend them here, since we don't make anything anymore. The stock market also went up on this news, since most of the Dow industrial companies are primarily doing business outside the U.S. and so also serve as an escape from dollar exposure. Oil was up, of course. Is it time to panic? No, not today. But clearly everybody is getting ready for the next crash. With the banking crash last year, everybody did the usual thing and bought dollars, since they didn't know what else to do. Next time, the oil states intend to have a prearranged exchange rate involving the more stable currencies with backing from gold. People with dollars can burn them instead of oil. The bounce the dollar got last year is the only thing that has kept the U.S. going, as it made the trade deficit manageable again. The corporate response was to outsource even more. As the dollar sags, the trade deficit is again mushrooming. It's not as apparent this time, since the limp economy does not require as many goods. Retailers are saying they won't offer the big discounts they did last year, having slashed inventories already. If you are wanting a bargain for your holiday shopping, be patient. Bankruptcy liquidation will provide one. As long as you aren't working at one of the many establishments about to go under. Canned goods always make excellent stocking stuffers. Prairie 2. Go to his website, prairienumeral2.com. Well, I've been saying that I'm very nervous. And I would imagine you are too, right? About what these rat bastards have in store for us. And have you been reading in the New York Times business section, or maybe not the business section, just I swear by the Times. I'm sorry, I do. I don't know why I apologize. I think it's a great newspaper. I really do. I like the New York Times. Sunday New York Times is the best thing published in the United States. It really is. If you disagree, okay. Is it a tool of predatory capitalism? Probably. I don't give a damn. I like the New York Times. They've been doing a series of articles, on and off, off and on, about how the game has just been refigured on in the financial services industry. They've also ran a series of articles here lately, not a specific series, but a number of articles about the predations that are being visited upon companies by private equity firms, companies that, you know, do things like employ people. The big one yesterday was the Simmons Mattress Factory, which at one time in this country was the primary producer of mattresses and one of the world's leading exporter of mattresses. Mattresses, you say? Yes, mattresses. At one point, Simmons employed what? If I remember the article correctly, 100,000 people in this country. The company has been bought and sold, chopped, channeled, grooved, ripped to pieces. Profits have been made by people who produce nothing. Workers have been laid off, careers ended, retirement funds destroyed, 401ks meaningless, while these predatory son of a bitches continue to rape us. Now, I'm just curious, Truth Seeker. That's just one example, by the way. There are hundreds, if not thousands. But on Wall Street, they're already have come up with all sorts of new instruments for the wealthy to continue to play with the lives of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Americans, as well as people around the globe. But we're concerned about people here, right? And it just goes on. Nobody stopped anything. This is what makes me want to get very, very upset with these right-wingers who call Barack Obama a socialist. I wish he were. You know, I said months ago that Malloy socialism was about the only hope I could see that this country had, and that would be to nationalize banking, energy, healthcare, transportation, and weapons production. Weapons production with the goal of eliminating weapons production altogether. But Barack Obama is no more of a socialist than I'm the Pope. And it's just astonishing. And to watch the teabaggers and the knuckle draggers and the Walmart shoppers continue. Do they advertise with us? They don't. Okay. And the Walmart shoppers to continue to buy into this garbage that Barack Obama, the guy who is trying to save capitalism's ass by diverting money that should go to you and me and our infrastructure into their pockets. Meanwhile, they are just goosing him, strangling him, making him look like a fool, stealing from us, stealing from him, lying, cheating, doing what predatory capitalism does best. And they're really doing it now. And do you know why? Because the whole goddamn thing is about to collapse. Prairie 2 has been writing to this show for months, and I've been reading his stuff on the air, and he's right. So it's about to collapse. And what are these vampiric sons of bitches doing? They're still playing their games. They're still jerking around credit card debt and mortgage debt and failed banks and this debt and that debt. That's all they're trading. That's all they're making money from. And they are making it so corrupted, it will be impossible. Listen to me. For once, I want to say something that really, I mean, what they're doing is utterly and absolutely destroying the system. The financial services industry, all of it. Everything from banking to insurance, all of it. Because they understand it's already dead. What they are doing is eating the corpse. Do you understand that? They are carving off chunks of this dead body that was our economic system. Now, the question here to me, and this is a question I think about every single day, because like a lot of people, I depend on a paycheck. I do not depend on investment income. I work for my goddamn money. And if I don't get a paycheck, I'm screwed. But I want to ask you something. When the system does collapse, what do you want it replaced with? Do you want it replaced with corporatism, or do you want it replaced with socialism? Because those are the only two choices you're going to have. Now, I'm not some genius, economically degreed college graduate where it concerns this stuff. This is just, you know, your liberal talk show host with 37 listeners making the statement. There's only two systems that are going to be available when this is over. Which do you think corporate America wants? Do you think they want corporatism or do you think they want socialism? What will corporatism look like? Look at Great Britain before the Industrial Revolution, maybe. Look at this country before Well, the same, before the invention of the steam engine and the cotton gin. You want to see what it will look like? No, it won't be farmers tending to the cotton fields. It'll be serfs doing whatever the hell it is we're going to do. You know, and I don't even know. Well, what's left? That's what corporatism is going to look like. You want democratic socialism? Do you want a president or a leader or a committee or whatever it turns out to be who says, okay, we have got to kind of divorce ourselves from the rest of the world. We've got to bring the troops home. We've got to stop this madness. We've got to rebuild the country. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to rebuild the country. And you're going to be paid for it. You're not going to be paid in money that is recognized by France or Abu Dhabi or China. You'll be paid in money that will be used for goods and services here in the United States of America. And you will survive and your family will survive and you'll be able to buy things and sell things and pay for things and eat. And very slowly, we will rebuild the country. We will rebuild it on a green economy. We will stop this goddamn craziness that has devoured us. We will stop the sound of the bankers eating the corpse. So which is it going to be? I may be just full of crap. Don't have a clue what I just said.
What, corporatism or socialism? What, there's no middle road?
No, the middle road, capitalism. You tell me. You think it's going to survive on what? How? Huh? So here we are. And you know what is infuriating to me? Is that, you know, here we go again. We let this happen. We could have stopped this at any time. But you know what got in the way? Greed. That's it. Selfishness and greed. You disagree? I'm going to open up the phone lines, and you can tell me if you disagree. The number here is 877-996-2556. Come on, bring it on. Bring it on. There was a gas strike, oil strike, lorry strike, a bed strike. Gotta be a Superman to survive. Gas bills, rent bills, tax bills, phone bills. I'm such a wreck, but I'm staying alive. Hey, girl, we gotta get out of this place.
With the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Arm yourself with the truth. All right. Phone calls. Steve is in Austin, Texas. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Mike. Good to hear you again.
Thank you.
Like the visit to San Francisco has kind of reinvigorated you, sir.
Oh, it was a lot of fun. I love that city. I love the people out there.
Great city. Great place.
Yeah.
First of all, there's got to be more than 37 of us out here listening to you. It's got to be at least 70 or 80.
At least.
At least. You're exactly on point, and none of it gets any play anywhere. Prairie Chew is frighteningly correct.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the square footage to buy enough canned goods.
Yeah.
And what some of these people don't realize is just how short-sighted their thing is about supporting the corporatism that is going on and just saying, well, I still got a job, but they got no benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Your pay is going down. All your expenses are going up. Yeah, you're right. Nobody's going to take dollars anymore except we fools here in the States.
Well, yeah, but as long as the dollars, I mean, as long as we, all right, let me put it this way. If we go to Malloy's Democratic Socialist model, which, of course, is a fantasy of the highest order, but if that were to happen, I don't want to use this as an example, and I don't want, I hope nobody challenges it and points out that it's a crappy example, but during the secession of the southern states, they printed their own money, and used it, and it worked just fine. So I'm not using that as an example, but I'm just saying, if we were, and that money was backed by, goods and services primarily, I think. I'm getting into quicksand here because I don't know, maybe Jefferson Davis had a bunch of gold bars stashed away in Birmingham or Montgomery or someplace, but, it was pretty much, since we've been off the gold standard since who? Since, Roosevelt, we've been off the silver standard since who? Nixon. We don't, the money only represents, the willingness of the federal government to purchase the money back. And usually that meant in, real estate or real property or manufactured goods. And we don't have anything anymore. Corporate America saw to that. So, what the hell is the money worth? It's backed by the U.S. economy. What's the U.S. economy doing? To anyone who hasn't been paying attention lately, it's going into the commode. So what's left? To me, and this is where, I claim and accept my complete naivete about this, but to me, what's left is to bring the boys back home, not set up Fortress America, but realize that we're in a world of doo-doo, as they used to say, and we've got to focus on what we do have, not on what we used to have, or not what we, what corporate America wanted us to have. And I think we need to just eliminate the financial services industry. I don't care how we do it. You know, take over, with Malloy socialism, or just blow it up, metaphorically speaking. Just get rid of it. All they have done is this. This is what the banking and financial services industry has done to us. We're looking at it hand in hand with the predatory capitalists. And I don't see a difference between or among any of these bastards. I don't see an ounce of difference between any of them. And they're doing it. Like I say, they're still doing it now.
And they're still doing it.
Right. While America is sinking, we're going to become England. No offense to the Brits, but they used to rule the world. Now they can't even rule their own island. So that's what we're going to become. Now the Brits do just fine. They don't need India. They didn't need Canada. They didn't need Australia. They're doing just fine. They didn't need the Middle East. I think they're doing just fine. The United States had better get to that. Only in the 2010 terms. I'm not talking about, the Brits still make things. We don't. We don't make a goddamn thing. We don't make anything. We don't do anything. And, except trade debt back and forth, just trade debt. And the people who are doing the trading are the ones making the money.
Yeah. We make war and we create bullets. And it's a dying industry. And the sooner we realize that, the better. Like you say, when there's a tragedy, family comes home. Family comes home, and everybody gets together and says, "What can we do?"
Yeah,
and we need to bring everybody home. We need to stop funding these pie in the sky defense systems, quote unquote. And we're not going to.
Obama's about to announce a renewed effort in Afghanistan because he has psychopaths now running the military. He has people who are truly insane. And Obama, his naivete, and Steve, let me move on. I appreciate your comments. We're coming up on a break here. I think Obama's, I'm not trying to get over on him. I'm not, you know, he's smarter than I am by a factor of a million. But, where it concerns what he's trying to do, you don't manage two war in a tanking economy and try to set up, healthcare for everybody and retain your sanity unless you have figured out a way to wall yourself off from the real world. Or the real world has penetrated so deeply into Obama, he knows he doesn't have any choices. There's nothing he can do. Absolutely nothing except play the game. I don't know what goes on in the man's head. I have no idea. But I can say that about anybody. The Republicans are ready to pounce. They're just waiting for 2010. These filthy sons of bitches are just waiting. They are the ones who are, while American predatory capitalism is eating the corpse of this country, these filthy Republicans are the hyenas who are lurking around as the big cats eat. And the hyenas are just lurking back in the shadows, getting little pieces of gristle and bone. The sons of bitches, and they're waiting for the 2010 election. Well, so am I. You know what I'm saying? Oh boy, so am I. Wait a minute, I'm getting way too keyed up. Let's take a break, and I'll go have some coffee, and we'll come back and take your phone calls. Stay there. I'm Mike Malloy. In just a second, I just want to share this with you because we have a lot of Canadian listeners, and I think the listeners in Canada understand all this. This according to the UN, Canadians have the fourth best quality of life in the world. Now, Iceland is included in the top three, and that's going to change. These numbers were all put together, right before Iceland tanked. Norway, number one. Australia, number two. Iceland, number three. And Canada, number four. It says in Canada, again, surpasses the wealthier United States, not for long, which has slid from 12th to 13th place between 2006 and 2007, the last year for which international data was tabulated, 2007. Okay, that's before Iceland tanked. Canada's position is unchanged since 2006. The figures are tallied by the UN Development Program's Annual Human Development Index, which analyzes the statistics of 182 countries. The executive director of the UN's Capital Development Fund said, quote, "It shows that development can be measured not just through output or economic growth. Because of Canada's well-developed social systems, it traditionally scores at the top of the table. The results come at a time when the U.S. is in a bitter debate over a new medical care system, and critics warn against Canadian-style socialism." The annual index weighs individual purchasing power alongside educational achievements and life expectancy. At the bottom of the scale is Niger. Only a cut above is Afghanistan, in spite of billions of dollars of development money that has been earmarked for that sad country. The most notable advance for 2007 was made by China, which leapt 7 points on the scale to 92nd place. So anyway, I doubt seriously if the Canadians would like to have an influx of American refugees coming there. Surely. But Canada, they're ahead of Ireland, the Netherlands, Sweden, France, Switzerland, Japan, Finland, Denmark, Belgium. Hmm. I don't think Canada would like to have a bunch of Americans showing up at the border crossings saying, let me in, please let me in. I look Canadian. I can even learn how to speak Canadian. Your dollars are prettier than ours. Did the Canadian cigarette packs still have the pictures of diseased and tumored lungs on the, remember when we, Kathy and I were still smoking a decade ago, and, well, more than that, about 12 years ago, we went to Canada, went up to Ohio to visit with my mother and, made a trip into Canada and to Windsor and, further into Ontario province. And, this is back when, the Canadian dollar and the American dollar were just way out of whack, favoring the American dollar, of course. And, the good old days. Went into a store to buy cigarettes. Eek! Oh my God! they didn't just print warnings like in this country. Cigarettes contain carbon monoxide. No. The pictures on the Canadian cigarette packs were, explicit. Those are the bad old days. I don't smoke. Haven't smoked for 8 years. But anyway, I digress again. I liked Canada. And I guess the main reason I couldn't tell it was any different from the U.S. I mean, once you cross the Detroit River, you know, you go over the Ambassador Bridge, you're in Canada. So, hello? Somebody speak Canadian. We are speaking Canadian. So are you. Oh. Now, I've not been to the Maritime Provinces. Is that what they're called? I have yet to go to Quebec, Montreal, or Quebec City. I'd love to go to Montreal. I understand that although it's colder than a well digger's ass up there most of the year, it's like a northern hemispheric, or I should say a western hemispheric Paris, right? Back to your phone calls. I'm sorry. Rick is in Coons Bay, Oregon. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Mike. Good talking to you. You did it to me again, though. I actually wanted to call originally to talk to you about your first rant on religion.
Well, go ahead.
I want to thank you for mentioning that there is a group out there of liberal Christians like myself. Some of us are thinking, and we don't see any serious conflict between Buddhism and Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're all divine, then there's no problem accepting Christ's divinity.
I've read several treatises, essays, whatever you want to call them, on the fact that the man Jesus was deeply influenced by travelers from the Far East whose interpretations of divinity and godheadness and so on and so forth were what he was trying to say, but he was dealing with people who were very uneducated, who were slaves for the most part of the Romans and the ruling elites. So, you know, you had to talk in parables and stories and yada yada, sort of like the way you have to talk to Sarah Palin, I guess.
Well, exactly. I'm 100% with you on that. And anyway, what I wanted to, since you started talking about the situation with the cabal of oil buyers and sellers.
Yeah.
I think your conclusions are absolutely correct of what will happen if they get away with it, but I don't think it's inevitable. If we can very quickly reestablish democracy in America by taking on the most corrupt senators, I think we can forestall that. And I think China's paying attention to see if we're going to try. You know, early on in the healthcare debate, they said they were watching the healthcare reform debate with great interest, which meant they weren't going to pay for it. And they're probably going to want to see some of their money back someday, but they made clear months ago that they're willing to give up hundreds of billions of dollars in order to stabilize the world economy.
The healthcare industry?
No. Because of all the trillions of dollars we owe them,
right?
They'll lose hundreds of billions of dollars if the dollar's devalued. by switching to another currency?
Well, but Rick, I think maybe what you're not considering, because I know I've never considered it, I think the rest of the world knows things that you and I don't have a clue of ever knowing, because we have a dishonest press and we have liars in government, people who would no more tell us the truth than pee up a rope. And the truth is that the rest of the world is tired of it. They're tired of it. A, B, aside from the kind of amorphous statement, they're tired of it, they look at the reality. What has the United States become? It is a country that is running around the world like insane people, chopping off heads, blowing up wedding parties, destroying economies, salting the rest of the earth with depleted uranium. Meanwhile, back at home, they have nothing. Their people are selfish greed heads who are starting to adopt a kind of bloodthirsty religion that says no quarter to anyone. They want to use the Jews in Israel as a stepping stone into heaven, and they're willing to that kind of stuff. I think the rest of the world is looking at us, Rick, as if we're mad, we're insane, and I'm sorry, pal, and I got to move on, but I hear you. I don't see any salvation here. I really don't. I just don't. I don't. I do not believe. And I'm not about to say I have no hope. I have lots of hope. I don't believe that our system, our so-called economic system, is at this point able to survive. I don't see it happening unless we develop leadership. And the only way we can develop leadership is to in the manner in which we think of leadership in this country, we elect it, is if we get an electorate that has some goddamn sense. If we have voters who can think above the level of their own asses, and I don't see that happening.
Words, weapons, sharpened knives, makes you wonder how the other half died.
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malone.
The hour, Rick in San Francisco writes, regarding Obama's Olympic effort, the IOC didn't reject Obama, they rejected America. Probably for the same reasons you enumerated a moment ago. My attitude about, and I, God knows I'm not alone, I don't know how many so-called liberal commentators will even mention this, probably not very many at all, if any. But this system is dead. What does it take to prove that an economic system is dead? What does it take? I know there are classic examples to prove that a system is dead. Germany in the 20s and 30s is, I guess, a good one. Soviet Russia after the revolution. It took that one a long time to be buried, but I don't think there was ever any doubt that Soviet-style communism just was not going to work. German-style fascism, which is not going to work. Of course, those are not necessarily economic systems. They are political systems. But you get my point, don't you? I mean, again, I would that I were more educated in economics so that I could talk more coherently, but I'm not. But that doesn't mean that, we can't talk about this. The system here, the predatory capitalism, and it's been developing since when? I mean, since the very beginning. Predatory capitalism is not new. Jesus. I mean, it's not an invention of George Herbert Walker Bush or Herbert Hoover. You know, predatory capitalism was here from at the beginning. We called it slavery at the time, but it was capitalism in a very predatory manner. And then finally we realized that even this great country was not going to sustain this greed and this filth and this refusal to act like honorable or rational human beings. So, you know, in the Spanish-American War, we decided to try our hand as an imperialist power. Well, it's over. It's over. Who is willing to say, no, it's not? Well, these half-assed Republicans who, you know, couldn't find the North Star if somebody handed them the Palomar telescope. It's over. So what do you do? Do we continue, or what do we do? Do we continue to embrace this corpse, which is what we're doing? We've been doing it, but we had lots of perfume to make the corpse not stink. We're out of perfume. You know, money, it's gone. So what are we going to do? How about using American ingenuity and history and developing our own model based on democratic socialism, but with some tweaks and twists and, you know, little adjustments here and there? What's so bad about that? Oh, that's right. The word socialism. Oh, son of a bitch. You might as well say leprosy. Only we don't even use that word anymore, do we? But democratic socialism that encourages that, you know, the small business, the family-owned business, or a little bit bigger, the family farm. Remember the family farm? Remember the family farm? Over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house we go. Yeah, da, 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 da. Thanksgiving's coming, and you're not. Tell me you're not going to eat one of those butterball turkeys that are just chock-a-block with petroleum. Please don't do that. But the system is dead. And it didn't happen yesterday or last week or a month ago. Come on. I'm no tribune who is blowing the trumpets telling you, oh, the system's dead. You know it. I'm sure you figured it out long before, you know, we talked about it on this radio program. But the liberals on radio won't discuss it. They won't talk about it. They won't bring it up. Why? Why not confront the reality while we still have breathable air, kind of? We still have drinkable water, sort of. We've got enormous things that could be done in this country that would generate income amongst ourselves. That would generate a coherent society? God, what an idea that is, huh? There's so many things we could do here. There really are. And they're not being done. But it requires nationalizing banking, the whole financial services industry. Energy, healthcare, transportation, weapons production. The system. Capitalism, what we have in this country, it's not a free market system. It never has been since day one. It's never been a free market system. Never. And you can believe the BS that tells you otherwise, but it has never been a free market system. But let's pretend the free market system we have in this country is dead. It's gone. It's over. So why not just confront that? But see, we don't confront anything in this country. We don't confront anything. We just keep pumping our heads full of gas and our bellies full of garbage and, you know, I don't know what. Hope that Jesus will come and lift us all up in the rapture. Oy.
Your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. The Molloy Show. Tom is in Folsom, California. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Mike. Just wanted to say thank you first because you really helped me get through those 8 years of Bush.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I know you don't take the compliments too well. I saw you when you were out here in Sacramento at that impeach Bush thing back in, what was that, 2006 or something?
Yeah, I think it was about 3 years ago, yeah.
But, you know, one of the things I always admired about you was that when I would come home after a day of working and I was, you know, be thinking about the death and destruction in Iraq all day, and I always felt, you know, are there other people in this world thinking about these things, you know? And then I would turn you on and, you know, you'd be right there. And not just to remind, you were like reminding everybody that this is going on, you know, people are dying, it's innocent, you know, waste of life, it's happening, and I just, it made me feel so good to know there was somebody who was, who had a voice that was being heard.
I think that comes in, I think that comes in the category misery loves company, huh?
Well,
no, I know what you're saying. I feel the same way when I come across people who, you know, writers or like Chris Hedges, whose book about American fascism I'm reading right now, or Jeff Charlotte, whose book on the Christian crazy people I'm reading right now. When I read people like that, or you know, there's a whole list of writers. Robert Perry, no matter what he writes at Consortium News. I feel Jesus, God, I'm not the only one who feels this way, because, you know, after a while, if you feel like you're out there on your own, you start to think maybe you're crazy.
Yeah. And you know, you're still there and you're still talking about everything that's totally relevant and important. And one quick thing I want to say too is that, I'm actually Finnish born. I was born in Finland and I've been here ever since. Mm-hmm. 55, and I like to tell a lot of people that I've been a citizen a lot longer than a lot of people I know now.
Right.
But, you know, I just, a few months ago, I took my daughter and I went back to Finland. My mom died a year ago and we buried their ashes there. And my dad and my sister went too.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some really good conversations with my uncle. And one thing I'll say really quick, he sat down at the table with me one day and he said, So in America, you have free elections. And I said, yeah. And he said, you vote who you want in office, right? I said, yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
And then he paused and he said, you have a lot of stupid people there, don't you? And he was referring to the 8 years of Bush.
Oh, sure.
But I got to tell you one thing, though. All of my cousins and everybody I met while I was in Finland, they are so thrilled and so happy that Obama is the president now. I can't even explain that to you how they're so ecstatic about the fact that we have somebody who he is. And
yeah, well, after 8 years of Bush, you know, I think anything on with a D after his name would have been you know, a glass of cold water to somebody dying of thirst. But Obama is not. I hope your cousins understand that Obama is not really turning out to be all that a lot of us thought he would. A, B, he doesn't seem to have the courage to do the things that need to be done.
That's right. Yeah.
So.
But, you know, Mike, there was something before the election. I was listening to you one night, and you made this comment, and it stuck in my mind, and I thought about it ever since. You said, you do that great laugh, that sarcastic attitude, and you said, you know, there is no way in this world, we all know it, you know it, everybody knows that this country's not going to elect a black man.
Mm.
And you just, you know, yeah, you know, like a snap back into reality.
Yeah.
Now here it is. Then it did happen.
And, yeah, and, I was surprised. Yeah. I think that's one of the things that I think blinded me with the emotion after growing up in this country and being here all my life and coming through all these various movements. I never thought it would happen in my lifetime. So, but I got caught up, deeply caught up in the emotion of that moment. And I think I'm starting to come back to earth and realize, or been coming back to earth and realize, hey, listen, I don't think Barack Obama has the courage. Maybe nobody does to do what's necessary. Hey, listen, I got to leave there. Thanks, Tom. Those are nice things that you said, and I appreciate it. Take care. Take care. Got an email here from another Tom. Mike, what's the issue here? Isn't this war crap all about the oil? Today I heard Obama's press secretary say quite emphatically that there would be no withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan. Obama says he's preparing to send 2 or 3 new brigades or 30 to 40,000 troops. That's just the start. Of course, the administration knows that the world is going to begin trading oil and other currencies. But the corporatists don't care what it's traded in as long as they own and control the oil. When corporations own the Caspian oil, the Iranian oil, the Iraqi oil, and the South American oil, who cares what it's traded in? So what if the American people all die of illness, starvation, and crime? Better for them, the corporatists, less to worry or concern themselves about. Besides, most Americans want death. In fact, most Americans are dead, talking corpses animated only by hatred, greed, ignorance, and fear. That's it. It's a done deal. It's what the Christian leadership likes to call the rapture, which in reality requires a big hole in the ground where the bodies of all things living go for their salvation. We're begging for it, killing off everything living in our path that might keep us from this divinity of grace, killing the Constitution, children, the elderly, the environment, each other, and ourselves, a perverted, suicidal, murderous people who won't stop until there's nothing left but ash. And all the liberal apathetics go, it's got to get worse before it gets better, and that's why we won't vote for anything that causes us to take responsibility for anything. And when it all goes to hell, they will say, see, I told you so, we were right, and you voters who care were wrong, we won, and now we're all dead. And that's the way it goes. Tom. Eek. No, I'm not laughing. I'm not laughing. No, Tom's a good writer, and Tom is certainly sincere in what he says. I'm not there yet. You know, I'm not there yet. I'm damn close to that, but I'm not there yet. You know, I really am not. But I certainly agree with what he said. Eddie is in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Eddie.
Hey.
Hey.
All right, you asked who is this economy working for?
Yeah, I did? Okay.
Oh, okay. It's not working for anybody except the people at the top. The, you know, the owners of the corporations, the owners of all the mining companies and every, you know, every commodity that you look at.
Yeah.
Those are the people that this is working for. And so that's who this economy is working for, and it's working for them better. The financial industry,
mm-hmm.
It's working for them.
Well,
they're deciding it.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's the old story, whoever makes the rules usually comes out a winner. I hear you. Thanks. Guido is in San Francisco. Hey, Guido.
Hey, good evening.
Hi.
One quick comment about what you were saying about the dysfunctional economy, just a side comment. And what I really wanted to say was, I don't know about you, but I've been hearing during this whole healthcare debate that they're saying, oh, and during the Bush years, we had 150% increase in our health insurance premiums.
Right.
I don't know where that comes from. I had 400% increase.
Yeah, yeah.
4 times in 8 years. Just unbelievable. And a brother that recently passed away from liver and kidney failure because he was an average working Joe with crappy health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
Didn't
sure.
qualify for the transplants and all that kind of stuff. And they put him, mm-hmm. but the only thing you do qualify for is a test group. A test group where mm-hmm. they gave him a sugar pill. Instead mm-hmm. of giving him the treatment he needed, they gave him a sugar pill.
He got the placebo.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a side comment. What I really want to say, I grew up around the D.C. area, Mason-Dixon line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got a certain accent, I guess. Go to school up in New York State. Hey, Southern dog. went to get my first job in Atlanta, of all places, when I left school.
Yeah?
And I was a Yankee dog.
Hey, hold on. Hold on, Yankee dog. Let me put you on hold, because I got to do a break here. We'll come back and pick this up in just a minute. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Quartet rang out across the bay.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took.
Thanks to the crew. They are, in no particular order, Ben Burtt, Sharon Gordy, Bruce Enberg, Kay Petrini, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and She Who Must Be Obeyed, Catherine Bay. And thanks to you for hanging out tonight. All right, back to Guido in San Francisco. All right, where were we, Guido?
Well, just what I was, first of all, what I wanted to say is you crack me up when you do your Southern cracker voice. So anytime you feel like getting into that persona, I enjoy it.
Yeah, but, I come by that honestly, you know, having lived here all these years, trust me.
But anyway, being a transplant to Atlanta for a little while after college, I lived up and down the East Coast.
Right.
I swear, I remember as a kid, instead of playing cowboys and Indians, we'd go out in the backwoods and play Civil War.
Hmm.
I think that's still happening today. And now these Blue Dog Democrats have joined in with the Southern Republicans, and they're still playing Civil War, only as adults now. And, you know, with the likes of Frederick Douglass in the White House instead of Abe Lincoln, they're just totally whack. So, you know, they're just determined not to prevent anything from happening under his administration.
Yeah, I think you're right, no matter what it is. I mean, when you have people who are supposed to be educated because they work for a magazine, even though the magazine happens to be the Weekly Standard, and you see that video of these dumb sons of bitches sit there laughing and high-fiving and cheering because the International Olympic Committee says Rio instead of Chicago, and they see that as a defeat for Chicago. I mean, for Obama, I mean, what kind of sickness is this? I'm so sick of these people. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, it's a civil war all over again. Of course it is. And
they can't even be dealt with. They're just illogical. Irrational.
Well, that's
like I hope Obama learns to move on. He just can't deal with his people.
Well, he doesn't seem to get it.
This,
you know,
bipartisan thing just ain't
right. I mean, I can understand why he does that because he is who he is. But I mean, how many times you have to be hit upside the head with a 2x4 before you realize that the person holding the 2x4 is, by God, just going to do it again?
Yeah.
You know. Hey, listen, I got to leave there. Thanks, Guido. I appreciate it, man. Thank you very much. Thanks for checking in. You know, reaching across the aisle, I'd reach across the aisle. I've said this before. I'd love to reach across the aisle, and in my hand would be a hand grenade with the pin pulled out. That's reaching across the aisle. Screw these people. They don't have, you know, Republicans, conservatives have absolutely nothing to give the country. They've devoured the country. They've murdered the country. They're sons of bitches. They have no interest in America. They hate the country. What they love is power and greed and selfishness. They don't have respect for this country. Jesus. Willie is in Flagstaff, Arizona. Hey, Willie.
How you doing there, Mikey?
I'm all right.
Hey, I was just listening to y'all. You know, I'm kind of disappointed with Obama myself. But I heard a call a couple of time ago. People talking about Bush and how, you know, Iraq and all that. And if you got a computer.
Do I have one?
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
You got one in front of you?
Yes, I do.
Well, can you Google? Can you Google? You got Google on that thing?
Google? What's Google?
Well, you know, it's like a some kind of search thing.
How do you spell it?
Google.
Google.
G-O-O-G-L-E.
What the hell does it do?
Well, go to Diego Garcia Uranium.
How do you spell that?
Diego?
The whole thing that you just said.
Diego is like San Diego, D-I-E-G-O.
Diego? Hold on. Okay, go ahead.
Garcia, G-A-R-C-I-A.
C-I-A, okay.
And uranium, U-R-A-N... U-I-M.
Okay, I got uranium. Now, what do I do with this?
Well, hit it.
Hit it?
You know, yeah, because you know what?
I just wrote it down. I wrote down a piece of paper.
Oh, you got to go to that site.
I don't know. Wait a minute. You asked me if I had a computer, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and if I know what Google is. I'm struggling. Willie, I'm struggling. Man, I'm struggling here. I'm not sure. But I'll try to figure out how to do it. Listen, I got a boogeyman. Thanks. I appreciate it. Take care. David is in Los Angeles. Hey, David.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
It's going, man.
Hey, listen, you know, I agree with you wholeheartedly. It's, you know, in terms of Barack Obama not pushing forward and just saying to hell with the people that he's trying to reach across the aisle to.
Right.
But I wouldn't go as far as to call him a coward.
Why not?
You know, he's a hopeful optimistic, you know, but not necessarily a coward. You know?
I think he may have come into office as a hopeful optimist or whatever, but I think once things were explained to him, All right. Maybe coward is too big of a, too nasty of a word. Maybe he's afraid. He's afraid that if he takes the power of his office and kicks some ass with it, that he is entitled to do, as allowed by the Constitution, that somebody is going to harm him or harm his family or do something bad because he has the power. He doesn't need to be messing with these freaks in the Republican Party. He doesn't need to do this. And the other thing, he made a lot of promises. I don't know if you remember, like, talking about ending this Defense of Marriage Act horse crap and ending discrimination against gays in the military and closing Guantanamo and on and on and on. And it seems like he got into power and all of a sudden a few people sat him down and said, don't even think about it, Mr. President. I don't know. David, I got to leave there. You hear the music, man. We're out of time. We'll talk again. Don't wait till the last minute to call in. I'd like to hear from you. All right? All right? Because you're probably right. He's probably not a coward. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Lower the cost.